But first, every couple of weeks, we're joined by nutritional consultant Pam Colleen. How are you today, Pamela?
I'm great, Tom. How are you?
I am terrific. Couple things I want to get to, but let's start first with a story you sent me about big tobacco lawyers now target the food industry. Yeah. Give me more details on this.
Yeah, no, this is very good news that the lawyer who actually fought and won the case against Big Tobacco many years ago, his name is Don Barrett, and he was the lawyer who would have been featured in the movie The Insider with Russell Crowe. At any rate, he has decided to jump back into the ring again and go up against Big Food and sue them for making all sorts of false claims with regards to their products. So he's, you know, this is going to be very interesting because he won his case against the tobacco industry and sued them successfully for $200 billion. And, of course, the food industry is huge, so there's no telling how much money he's going to basically sting them with. And they need to be stung. They need to have, you know, people need a reality wake-up call here because a lot of what they're doing is very, very ruthless marketing.
Now, what is he going after them for? I mean, what is he targeting for ingredients such as, well, it's too fattening or it's too sugary. It tastes too good. People can't stop putting it down. Or is there something else that he's like, you know what? What you're doing here is you're not advertising truthfully about what's in your food.
Mostly it looks like what he's doing is he's going after the shady labeling that we see on so many of these products, these health claims that are untrue. For example, if you were to buy a product that says, you know, this cereal lowers your cholesterol, we know that's not true, but they keep getting away with it, and consumers blindly buy these products thinking that this health claim is valid when it's not. And then, for example, if you see here in Canada, we see that health check mark on certain foods.
Right.
Well, CBC uncovered that as being basically a fraudulent health check. This is a self-endorsement. Companies pay to the tune of $2.6 million to get these health checks labels on their products.
What about a label like when they say natural?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most things are natural, aren't they? Or if they say healthy, I mean, do we have any? If they say light, I mean, I guess if I cynically looked at it, anyone could almost put that on anything.
That's right. And even terms like evaporated cane juice, he's going to be going after that issue too, because that's just saying sugar. And they're trying to disguise the fact that it's in the product because so many more people are now questioning our consumption of sugar as because people are learning that sugar is causing all sorts of health problems. So I hope he's successful. I hope that, you know, that this will help clean up the food industry somewhat.
Now, ultimately, what is the goal? Obviously, because with tobacco was such a harmful product that ultimately, as a society, as much as we can't ban tobacco through education, we'd like people to not use tobacco. However, I need food. Mm-hmm. I need to eat. I mean, I don't have time. I am not a subsistence farmer. My life is not dedicated to growing and then preserving and pickling and canning. As much as that is a noble pastime, I can't spend all my time worrying, thinking about my next meal. I would like some convenience. I work at another job. I'm not dedicating hours of my life to providing meals for my family. How will this make it better?
Well, I think consumers need to be told the truth. I think that if they had the correct information, they would make better food choices. Right now, unfortunately, when they see a product on the shelf available for sale, the assumption is that product has been scrutinized, that it's safe, that it's somehow good for us. And unfortunately, that's just not true. The vast majority of the products in a grocery store, for example, in the middle aisles in particular, those products are not, there's no track record to prove that they're safe or healthy. These are newfangled foods that only really just started showing up in our diets over the last 50 to 100 years. So there's no historical precedence to prove that they're safe or healthy for us. And yet you see, when you walk down those aisles, you see all sorts of health claims, which really are completely invalid.
All right, but in terms of, I can't be expected to make, let me give an innocuous example. I can't be expected to make my own spaghetti sauce from scratch every fall using fine ripened Roma tomatoes and I just want a can of spaghetti sauce. That's mm-hmm. it. It's in the middle row. I know there's probably some sugar in there for taste and some salt in there to keep it, and I'm sure there's some preservatives and additives, but I mean, don't I as a consumer make a bargain and say, good enough?
you can. You can actually say to yourself, what's the best I can do here? And making your own spaghetti sauce from scratch, even if you're using canned tomatoes, is still better than buying the entire spaghetti sauce prepackaged. And again, there's going to be even more problems with it probably if it's got meat in it and sitting on a shelf. To me, that just screams of problems.
Okay, yeah, I would never buy meat on a shelf. I'll go to my local farmer, I'll get grain-fed beef, I'll have it ground up, I'll put it in the sauce, but I'm still getting a sauce on the shelf.
Yeah, you meant to say grass-fed, right, Tom?
Oh, yeah, that's right, grass-fed, right, right. And he's walked every day for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, when people are eating and they're on the run, I do try and encourage them to make the best choices they can under their circumstances. But unfortunately, just for example, the other day I was stopped at a stoplight and there were two people walking in front of me crossing the street. And each of them in one hand had one of those big gulps or whatever you get from 7-Eleven. In the other hand, they had what looked like a big chunk of a brownie. And they were both morbidly obese. And I thought to myself, you know, they could never pay enough taxes on these foods to cover their health care costs, the sicknesses that they're going to get because of eating these foods. And they are completely oblivious, probably, to the consequences of eating so much sugar in their diet.
And one of the things that they're probably oblivious, but I guess ultimately, and this with the labeling is ultimately the answer. The only way we can really change things is ultimately through education. That making people aware, you make a conscious choice every day, three times a day, to put something into your body, and you should be more aware of what that is doing to your body or how it interacts with your body to produce positive outcomes or sometimes negative outcomes. And the labeling on food is not helping.
That's right. And there's a few arguments here, and some scientists are coming forward to discuss this issue. Number one, if we look at cigarettes and the labeling, the warning labels that were put on cigarettes, that did help reduce smoking here in North America. So it went from 50% of the adult population smoking to about 20%. Along with that, of course, they added more taxation to the product, and that too had a role in reducing smoking. So what scientists and activists are doing is they're saying, well, public health had a bit of a success story with smoking, so let's see if they can translate that over to the food industry as well. So maybe it's not just a lawsuit that's going to wake people up. Maybe it's going to be potentially putting warning labels on these foods so people can make a better choice. But finally, Tom, you're right. Education, self-empowerment, you know, those types of things are going to be, I think, ultimately what solves the problem.
15 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen on the program. She joins us every couple of weeks to talk about what we eat and the choices we make and how we can make better choices. And Pam, when we come back, obviously you have some knowledge of what went on in XL Foods, but I haven't talked to you about XL Foods. So I want, now that the things are starting to settle down in Alberta, and certainly you can comment on what do you think is wrong or what you think is right with XL Foods? I mean, because there's a lot of Canadians who are concerned about consuming beef. So how do we make it a safer system? Because I know, just like I am, I'm not giving up meat. You know, I'm not giving up meat, but I want to make sure the meat I consume is safe. So I'd love your comments on that when we get back. Fair enough?
Sure, sounds great.
All right, 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. 21 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joining us on the program. And Pam, I know it's been a few weeks, but now that everything's settled down, I want your thoughts on the XL meat problem. Obviously, you know, we still have a recall underway for beef that was contaminated back in August. And it put a lot of Canadians questioning their purchase of red meat, which we've seen in steady decline since about the 70s.
Yeah.
And so here I am and almost having to defend the choice that I eat meat. I'm like, yes, I eat meat. I mean, we're designed to eat meat. I have no problem with eating meat. And so the problem is Canadians now want to make sure, and rightly so, that every food they purchase is going to be safe. How do you look at this situation? How do you think that how do you make sure that the food you get is as safe as possible? Because I don't know if there's ever going to be a system 100% safe, but how do you make sure that the food you get is as safe as possible, especially meat?
Well, when you buy your food from small local producers and you can look them in the eye and you can see that the food that they're producing is the same food they feed their spouses and their children, that's a pretty good bet that you're going to be getting at least, you know, safer food. Because these small family farms, they take pride in the food that they eat, and they don't want to make food that's sick and that's going to make their family sick. So if you're a customer of these small family farms, I think you're making a way better choice to begin with. Another thing to keep in mind with the news and how it's being reported with regards to XL is one thing that is very prevalent is being left out of the media, and that is, how did the E. coli get there in the first place? And I can tell you it's highly unlikely that it came from somebody who didn't wash their hands in the facility. I think a
lot
of
it came from a cow, didn't it?
Well, this is the problem when you have grain-fed cows. Cows are ruminants, which means that cows should be fed grass. And when you feed grain to a cow, then what you're doing is you're increasing the chances that that cow is going to have E. coli.
Why is that?
And the tragedy in this, I mean, the answer is so blatantly obvious to me, but the tragedy is that even our government has done this research. Our government, back in 2002, along, this was Health Canada, the CFIA, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, that is, and the University of Guelph, published a study that was done out in Alberta. And they took cows that were fed grain in a stall feeding operation. And then they took those animals that were shedding E. coli, by the way, they took them and put them out on pasture to eat grass and soak in the sun, like cows are supposed to do. And guess what happened, Tom? They stopped shedding E. coli. So they know that the solution is to put the animals back outside where they belong. But unfortunately, the media is overlooking this very, very essential fact.
Interesting. Now, is it the outside? Is it the grass? What is it that reduces the E. coli?
Well, first of all, the cow is getting the food that it's supposed to be getting. Right? Cows are supposed to be eating grass, not grain.
Right.
And secondarily, you have that married with the notion that they're out in the sun getting the vitamin D, which is going to also help with their immune system. And when consumers eat animals that are pasture-fed, not only are you getting meat or dairy, for example, from a healthier animal, you're going to get more nutrition in the area of minerals, for example, in the area of the fat-soluble vitamins A and D, both of them. So you're going to get a more nutrient-dense food if you're buying animal foods that are pastured.
Wow. And you'll be happy to know, I have a friend who has a friend who raised cattle this year for the first time, and he's a veterinarian, and so he's like all pasteurized or a pasture, whatever, grazing cattle, and so he's like, you know, he's pretty respectful of animals, and he's not, you know, obviously he's a veterinarian, so he knows how to care for animals, but he's like, yeah, I'm trying this out, and it's all going to be grass fed in, you know, on his land, and I'm like, oh, sign me up. This is what I'm looking for, and he's just starting out. He's really small, but I'm like, because of our talks, I've been so interested in finding a better source of beef, and now I have a direct connection to a farmer who is raising cattle this way.
And that's what I would encourage your listeners to do, because ultimately the solution to this problem with XL is for consumers to vote with their dollar and say that they do not want factory farmed beef anymore, that there's risks involved in the whole, not just the production and assembly line process, but in terms of how the cow is being fed in the first place. So I did a show on this last week here in London, and I announced the website www.londonareaorganicgrowers.com, and on that website you have a list of farmers that are doing more sustainable, more authentic forms of agriculture. So you can get in the London area lots of sources of food, chickens, beef, pork, whatever, that are from pasture-raised sources. I don't know if there's an equivalent website in St. Catharines, Tom, but I would certainly encourage somebody to compile a list and post it online so consumers know where to go to get these wonderful foods.
And considering that we are in, just like London has such a strong agricultural region, London's a city and an island of agriculture, Niagara has such a strong agricultural, I mean, we're thought more of as, you know, tender fruits and grapes, but of course our biggest agricultural product here in the peninsula is actually chicken, and we have a number of beef providers, but we don't really think of that in terms of, you think of Niagara, you think of the fruit. And you think of London, you think of, you know, a sea of corn. But in fact, you know, there's so many farms who provide such an array of products. I don't know, but I'm sure we could endeavor to find out a list of area farms that provide what you would recommend.
I think you should put it up on your website, Tom. I think it would be a tremendous resource for everybody in the Niagara region. And that's where I think consumers can feel more empowered. When they read these stories in the newspapers about XL and so on, they feel powerless. They don't know what the solution is. And the solution isn't to become a vegetarian, by the way, because that'll lead to all sorts of health consequences. So
the solution is to find a safer, better source of beef.
That's correct. That's the real solution here. And remember, if people keep looking at this red herring where they want to blame the machinery in XL or they want to blame an employee at XL, remember, this is just a distraction. It's people that just don't want people to question the system as it is.
Pam, always an education. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again next week. Or, pardon me, we'll talk again in 2 weeks' time.
Sounds great, Tom. Thanks so much.
Take care. That's Pam Colleen. 28 minutes after 11 o'clock, she's our one of our nutritional consultants. Every Wednesday, we have on either Pam Colleen or Lisa Petty to talk about how to live a little healthier.